What's up, Beast Place? August 1st, 2020. So I did a thing on the... I don't really like being political. Because I don't want to become a political thing. If this ever happens to work, which it probably won't. The way I want it to. I don't want to be Tucker Carlson or Rachel Maddow or anything like that. So I, you know, kind of avoid it, but this is just too cool. So watch the debate, and I gave my impression of it, and you know, it's funny because yesterday, you know, I watched the responses they had and the immediate responses. Now that there's been a day to spin, my view of it's totally not what this is. One, there's things I didn't anticipate or I don't agree with. It's kind of weird. So number one, it had really low ratings. Like, not a lot of people watched it, which is, like, I think sad, because that is one of the most entertaining, which is at the end of the day what you're doing. This entertainment, man, this is like a sport. It means more than the Super Bowl, but it's a sport because, yeah, you're voting, but you're not really a huge part, blah, blah, blah. You're not really affecting this. You have almost no real means to affect the process in any meaningful way. Even some, you know, when Jon Stewart comes out and says he felt impotent, you know, as an individual, not a lot of push there. And even as the Richie Riches, the people that kind of control this country, there's 160,000 of them, according to Harvard political scientist, PhD guy that tried to figure this out, that the people that get what they want, and they do, and they get 60% of what they want. So again, it's like, you know, they have more control, they get more. I know a lot of people that have like clout in the sense that they can get stuff personally. You know, like, I need help with getting a Medicare license for my hospice, or I need help dealing with some government bureaucratic system or something like that. I know people like that. They can get that done. You know, but as far as like moving the national needle, very few individuals have a real power to do that. And when they do, I have a feeling they hide it. Right? And in you know, otherwise, it's like the Koch brothers and George Soros, to use the two biggest boogie monsters on the boogeyman on the left and right. I wouldn't want that kind of attention, because you never know when some psycho is gonna like that thing where one dude attacked a pizzeria because he thought there was a child pornography ring in the basement. Dude, okay, so. All right, so it's just like a fun thing. So why not watch it? Do you know what I mean? Like, I was kind of didn't want to watch it because I was kind of like knew that I'd be almost embarrassed, which I was by it. And then I already gave my personal outlook on it. You can listen to the previous podcast, the presidential debate one, on that. But apparently, the fact that there's low ratings means people have already decided. And usually that means it's good for the incumbent. Incumbents have huge amounts of advantage. Not that that's not ever overcome, but think about it. Some guy's in Congress for like 30 years. You think no one will try to unseat him? Yeah, well, he's like a Republican or Democrat from a Republican or Democrat district. Yeah, but there's constantly people trying to take your seat, man. Even if it's primaried, you know? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez took some guy's seat that was on there for like 30 years. Now that's reflective of the demographic change in that neighborhood from that dude's demographic to her demographic, but as one of the probably big reasons for it. But there were like a bunch of Hispanic girls are going to try to take her spot. Ilhan Omar. You might get away with it for a couple years, but sooner or later, someone of your thing is going to try to, you know, one of your friends is going to try to steal your girlfriend or boyfriend. Just how kind of these things work. But anyway, so apparently it's good for incumbents that no one watches because the incumbent, so people watch it if they're unsure, they want to change their mind. So people are prior sure. And that's the thing. I think a lot of people are pretty sure what they want to do one way or the other. I always found it weird. They had these undecided voters like, I can't decide between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I'm like, are you kidding? Are you seriously can't make that decision? Like in seconds from hearing them talk? Like, Donald Trump's a little bit different because his political record was shorter. From the moment he came down that escalator and said the things he said, you knew where you're going to stand on this dude. And with Hillary Clinton, she's got years. She's been around for years. The only people who should be undecided voters are like 18 to 22 year olds voting for the first time who just weren't, who know, I mean, you have to be so disinterested in this. Then again, this is kind of like, I'm really into it, so it's hard for me to understand when people aren't. The article I read made it this this elephant versus the rider, and the basically your lizard brain keeps your body going. It's like, and you use your intellectual part of your brain to justify the emotional part of your brain's desires, wants, and actions. And that part of your brain thought, and so here's the next kind of thing, that part of your brain views that debate as a victory for Trump. Because he was more aggressive. Okay. All right. I mean, I'll buy that. Sort of the lizard brain. He calls it the elephant, but whatever. The lizard brain, I can kind of see that because people don't respond well to nice. They don't respond well to mean either. They respond well to assertive, which means, hey man, I'm not going to let you steamroll me, but I'm not going to be mean about it, and I'm not going to take advantage of you. That's respected. Disrespected. Bullies. Disrespected. People that let you walk all over them, like the antithesis of a bully, like a wallflower or doormat. So, in effect, because Trump was so aggressive, that the people's lizard brains will like Trump and then they'll vote for Donald Trump because of their lizard brains. I've always had this theory that the most charming person wins these elections almost all the time. In my lifetime, of elections that I've really been aware of was 1988 is the first one. The final sort of battle there was between George Bush the first, and so George the first, and a guy named Michael Dukakis. And Michael Dukakis had the charm, not a lot. Follow on, Bill Clinton wins. Okay, Bill Clinton's way more charming than George Bush the first. However, that election was strongly helped by the fact that a third party candidate was able to get 20% of the vote. In Ross Perot. I mean, he created a third political party that was viable for about a decade after. They got elected, I believe, at least one governor in Minnesota or Michigan or Wisconsin. Can't remember. I think it's Minnesota. And they got like a bunch of local guys elected across the United States. It sort of fizzles out because the two big monsters just eat you up. They're not going to allow third parties, okay? I mean, they don't officially ban them. It's just, you know, you're one in order to get more parties, one of the political parties has to actually dissolve before we can get a third party. But then we get a third party, it'll just be another two. No. One of these parties dissolves, it could create a lot of openings for people, because there's people in the Republican Party that would otherwise like to vote for Democrats except for fill in the blank. Abortion, guns, taxes, whatever it is. But they're like, everything else, I'm a Democrat, except for this, but this is more important. Same thing on the Democrat side. And if you get, you know, one of these political parties, like, melt, it leaves a vacuum, and that vacuum could possibly be filled by, say, 2 to 4 more parties. But even in, like, England, Scotland, France, They don't have two-party systems the way we do, but it's pretty close. Anyway, so lizard brain argument, which to me, personally, I felt the opposite about it. Now, definitely Trump was more aggressive, but I think he was coached, and I think it was intentional. And Biden was kind of not very aggressive and kind of passive and just sitting there. But he was laughing at him, which is kind of an alpha move. And he did tell him to shut up and call him a clown, which is like, you know, not exactly being a doormat. And I think he was coached on, like, take the high ground. And we have to, it's like, no. My next coaching to him would be like, look, this next debate, fist fight. Like, I might tell him at some point, literally, physically accost him. Maybe not actually make contact, but get mad and take a couple steps towards him and see what he does. That's what I would tell Biden to do. This idea that you're going to, like, take the high ground and play by some set of rules or whatever, I don't know why you'd want to do that, especially with Donald Trump, because he's not going to. And it'd be more fun for me to watch, which is the most important part. Anyway, I would actually tell Trump to tone it down a little. Like, don't interrupt him on everything. Let him. If he's talking about something that's going to get him in trouble, let him. Let him dig his own grave. Right? Not always. I mean, there's time. You got to interrupt sometime, but whatever. So that was like another interesting point. Another one I kept seeing was this idea that the real debate was between Trump and Wallace. And there's like one cartoon that shows Trump screaming and shows Mike Wallace on the other podium screaming back at Trump, and then shows Biden like the fetal position sucking his thumb. I didn't get that impression. I thought what Chris Wallace was doing was actually trying to be the moderator. For real. Now, he wasn't particularly pro-Trump, like the questions and whatever. But he hit on a lot of them. I mean, right now, most pressing points, protests, riots, Supreme Court, coronavirus. Every other discussion is linked. So if you want to talk about taxes, it links to those things. We're going to need more taxes because we're going to have to give people money. Like, if you're making money now, you're going to have to share more because other people are no longer capable because we said they couldn't. And because we said they couldn't, we now have to pay them. And the way we pay them is by taking money from you, right? Whether you want to pay that in income taxes or sales taxes or through inflation with the Fed printing money, it doesn't really matter. You're going to pay it. Secondly, the SCOTUS stuff. That's a big deal because the Supreme Court and federal courts have been used at least since the 1950s to legislate laws. Like, they were like, you need to make this law. Like, wait, you can strike down a non-constitutional law. That's all you can do. They're like making new laws. Like, they're finding, well, you have a right to this. If you in a common law system, like this idea of a right to privacy for abortion, now I think abortion should be legal under certain situations. However, I don't see how this, like, well, the Constitution says you have a right to privacy. Okay, well, then the drug war's over. Because if I have a right to have an abortion or cut off my arm or cut off my genitals, why am I not allowed to shoot heroin? It's actually probably less destructive than cutting off your arm or your genitals, right? I want to change my hormone profile. Totally agreed. You want to do that? By all means. I'm not saying those other, I'm saying that, like, because of those, we should also have complete drug legalization. I should be able to walk into a store and be like, I'll take a gram of cocaine, 3 grams of injectable heroin, 2 grams of snortable heroin. I'd like a couple crack rocks, a pound of weed, some LSD, DMT, shrooms. And what's that new designer thing? Yeah, I'll take that. And some MDMA. I think I named them all. If I missed something, tell me. I don't think they should be illegal. I think it causes more problems than good. And also, there's a logical chain of events from Roe v. Wade to ending the drug war. Should, like, already have happened. But, you know, I guess the people in power do not want legal drugs. Why? Because they can get them anytime they want, if they choose, without almost no repercussions. Like, users, I don't think, get a lot of repercussions. They're not really targeted. Secondly, it messes with their workforce. They don't want people doing drugs that work for them. And so, because they, look, I think drugs should be legal, but I'm not stupid. I know they're bad. It's not good for you, for real. I'm not joking. None of them are. All right? There is a strong argument to make that occasional or once in a lifetime, you know, once every 5 year, once a year usage of psychedelics, once a month maybe, can have positive effects on your life. That includes pot to a lesser degree. There's certain things about marijuana that has positive effects. However, heavy daily use, no good. Tobacco, not good for you. Stop doing it. That's the dumbest of all drugs, by the way. Tobacco. Just, okay. Meth. Now, if you get legal meth, you probably wouldn't have the problems you're seeing, because a lot of what you're seeing is the toxicity of it. But here's the deal. I mean, people are already doing meth. It's called Adderall. There's three kinds of amphetamines. Amphetamines, dextroamphetamines, and methamphetamines. Adderall is a combination of amphetamine and dextroamphetamine. Methamphetamine is a third type, okay? Some of the problem with the teeth is caused by vasoconstriction. My whole point of that is the Supreme Court's important, and that's the thing they should have talked about. And because they're saying Chris Wallace didn't hit one important topic. So he hit on that. He hit on COVID. And then, of course, like race relations, riots, protests. That needs to be solved to some degree. Some compromise needs to be made between these warring factions that's good enough to keep them from rioting and good enough to keep them from, like, bitterly sitting there waiting to get revenge, which is like a lot of the country is doing right now. If you think for 1 second that these protests have not had negative effects on a significant part of the United States, meaning they see it on TV and go, "I hate the people protesting." Because at first it's like, oh, they're protesting for this thing. And then they set a target on fire and it's over. Sympathy gone. I hate you. Gun them down in the streets. That's what's going on in people's minds. You know, maybe not quite that extreme, whatever. But I'm just saying. Law and order. Law and order. Law and order. I don't want law and order. I mean, I want law and order, but I don't want a ramp up of police. I don't want to defund the police. I want to train them. I want them to have more money. I want them to get better training. And I want them to be demilitarized. And I don't want no-knock warrants. No such thing. You're executing a warrant. You show up during the day. Or like in normal times. They busted in that dude's house. Oh, he was a drug dealer. So what? You busted into his house. In fact, a drug dealer is more likely to shoot at you. He's got drugs and cash. How does he know? He's half asleep. You might be screaming police. That dude's half asleep scrambling for a gun. No. No, not warrants. All right. So that sort of was covered. And yeah, like I really, you know, the reaction of like, what the hell was that? Was my sort of reaction. Like, oh, geez. Wow. Like that was not what I was kind of expecting. And but yeah, so those are some of the things that have come up that I just didn't think of. I don't necessarily agree, or I don't think I don't see some Trump as being like the big winner in this debate or Biden being the big loser. I don't really understand this idea of like, well, the lizard brain loves Trump. Like what? Okay. I mean, I get the argument made is very solid. It's like you read it, you go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But you're like, does it really? Is it like, because it passes a like common sense test, but and then this idea that like the whole fight was with Chris Wallace. He wasn't fighting Chris Wallace over the substance. Chris Wallace was just trying to get him to let Joe Biden talk. He wasn't anyway. And so, like, yeah, it was a little bit surprising to see on Twitter people's reactions, which was along those lines. Like, well, they didn't hit the important topics, and he was fighting Chris Wallace. And, you know, a lot of my left-wing friends saying things like, you know, like, did Joe Biden didn't take the high ground enough? Are you kidding? That guy showed a lot of restraint. Either that or he's, like, a pussy. But I think he showed – you could see on his face, like, he's like, no – no, like he was like holding back. Half the time he's holding back. He slipped twice. I mean, and then you have to like do the overtalk thing. It's like a necessary component. Anyway, love you. Thanks for listening, and tune in again later, some other time. All right, bye.